modify his recommendation, since we don't have those numbers yet. The school districts do not have their individual givebacks yet. But I'd like to start off by reading a press release that will be released to the paper shortly. The Cambridge Central School Administrators Group has agreed to take no increase in salaries, in essence taking a freeze in their earnings for the 2012-13 school year. This comes on the heels of an earlier agreement to accept additional responsibilities with no additional increases in salaries. The savings to the Cambridge Central School District for the all items will be in excess of $35,000. The administrative team, consisting of the elementary principal, the secondary principal, and the secondary associate principal, had earlier agreed to the taking on of the duties of the CIO, which is the Chief Information Officer, a little over $20,000 in savings to the district, and the consolidation of the administrative portion of the Committee on Special Education Chair, a $7,500 savings. The no salary increase for the 2012-13 school year will amount to $7,571, and with benefits it translates to a little over $9,000. It should be noted that the Cambridge Administrative Association is under no obligation to approach the district and offer any concessions, since their contract ran through the 2012-13 school year. Pending board approval, the administrative contract will be extended through June 2014. And on behalf of the board, I would like to thank you folks. We're very grateful for this generous give back to us. Thank you. Vince, I'd like to turn it over to you.
I have to first apologize. Like Tom said, I have no real numbers. There are some tweaking of what happened with the expenditure side, and we'll go over that. But we're still waiting on the state runs. Based on the agreements that have come out at the state level, the report is that $50 million of the $250 million that Governor had set aside for grants would still be used in a grant form, and an additional $75 million would also be used for future grants or something along those lines. I don't know all those details yet, which leaves out of the $250 million, only $125 million. So we don't know how that's going to go back to the districts at this point, or how much it is until they do those runs. The one thing that when we get to it, I'll show you the health insurance that we were told was going to be at 11%. The consortium that we belong to was unable to buy back that 1%. So it went to an actual 12% increase, which been a difference of $26,000, and I'll show you on the bottom line when we get to that. But there have been numerous questions about what we're talking about when we stand here and refer to the EPPR, the Annual Professional Performance Review. And I asked Carl Clint, who is our chair of the committee at the school district, as teachers and administrators, trying to come up with what we will be using for the evaluation tool, to just say a few words. And if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them after that. We're still negotiating, so there's not a lot that can be discussed in public to the details of what ours will look like. But Carl, if you want.
As Mr. Canini and Dr. Wolski have asked me, just to do almost an informational piece, a clarification. And so this is we're famous for using acronyms in education. APPR stands for the Annual Professional Performance Review. Starting next year, all the teachers at Cambridge and the principals will be receiving a rating score each year in an attempt to measure how effective they are in their positions, both in administration and teaching. There are four possible ratings that a teacher or principal can get. They are highly effective, the best rating, effective, developing, and then the lowest rating would be ineffective. That score is derived in three different areas. The state test scores that the children take each year are 20% of that rating score. A local test or assessment to kind of see how student growth and student development is going is another 20%, and then 60% is based on the kind of jobs they do in their classroom and professionally, development, all those things that go into making excellent teachers, and that's 60%. Principals are scored on how well the teachers do, so there's a direct link. The Faculty Association here, along with the high school and elementary principal, As Mr. Panini alluded to, we're in the process of putting that APPR agreement together, which has a deadline of this summer for all intents and purposes to be sent on to the State Education Department. It's still very much a work in progress, but we're very optimistic that we'll have an instrument set perhaps in May or so, and then it'll be up to the Board of Education and the Faculty Association to agree on the details and negotiate the pieces and then send it off to the state.
I hope that's brief enough to answer to some of the questions that you have. It's probably one of the things that were most debated in the state at every level. I still have a concern with it that it will be different from school district to school district, and you will not be able to compare apples to apples teachers between the districts. That's another issue for another time.
Vince, can you go a little more into a little more detail about the observation piece of that?
The amount of time that will be taken?
Yeah, because that affects the budget situation more directly.
The way it's set up now, the non-tenured individuals in the Cambridge School District are observed. This will open it up to every individual, all the teachers. They're saying at least two observations. So to quantify the time, I don't have that in front of me, but we sat down and tried to figure that out, and it works out to at least 43 days per administrator, just doing nothing else but doing observations. And quite frankly, when they gave that to me, I think that was a conservative estimate. There's a pre-observation. One of them has to be planned, one of them does not. Those are all the details that are being worked out, but there are usually pre-observations, the observation itself, a post-observation, and then the write-up of the entire situation. So it's not just going into a classroom for 40 minutes. It's much more than that. More than that. All right. Like I said, there isn't a lot to go over this time, so I wish we would have known sooner than this so we could have postponed this to next Wednesday. What I'm being told, or what the scuttlebutt is that the vote technically will be on Friday, and it appears that there doesn't necessarily want to have, the governor doesn't want to necessarily have that available, so there's repercussions or people gathering and arguing prior to the vote. And I find that very disheartening. It goes back to the same thing I've said all along. The governor has balanced the state's budget, and I can't remember who I was watching on television last night made the statement that the budget this year is less than last year, and last year's was less than the year before, and it's at the expense of the children. In New York State, we closed the gap, the state budget shortfall, on the shoulders of our children. And every other municipality, whether it be the village, the town, the county, everything has been cut from the state, and we have to raise that locally. And for better or worse, the school budgets are the only one that's voted on, so if it's a board that needs to increase or go for a supermajority, all they have to do is have 60% of their boards. In our particular case, we have to have 60% of the voting populace at that particular election vote in favor of something, if we decide to go with higher than what they call the 2% tax cap, which again we pointed out for the last several meetings is only a limitation on what we can raise as a levy. It is 4.2%, I think, right now. And is that on the slide? Okay, go to the next slide. Okay. Again, what we're talking about in this case is the 2% comes into play when you're getting down midway through. It says allowable growth factor, less CPI, or 2%. That's the number that is multiplied by 2%. So there's adjustments before the multiplication, adjustments after, which nets the amount of money that under the 2% tax cap can be raised without having a supermajority of 4.266% for a total of $314,920. The revenue at this point, since we don't know what happened at the state, it has been unchanged. So the next one shows you the same thing that we've been doing. That's, there are no adjustments whatsoever. So if you've come to any of the previous presentations, you're not going to see any difference. But I wanted it there in case we had to go back for answering a question or whatever. The last time, or the fourth time, we look at the expenditures, we can go into the next one. This goes down again in the benefits section. The health insurance came in at 12%, which meant a $26,000 swing. So if you take a look at the bottom, it's a 1.75 increase over the expenditures from last year, for $310,164.84. So that brings us to what we were talking about in the past. 1% of the levy is $73,855. That equates to about 13 cents on a $100,000 on true value. And on a home of $100,000, that would be $13. That's before STAR. We have no way of knowing who is eligible for STAR and which STAR the people get in each township. It's supposed to be in $30,000 and $50,000, but if your equalization rate is not at 100, it will be adjusted accordingly, up or down, wherever it falls. So for us to sit here and tell you that basic STAR, there's 8 different townships, there's 8 different basic STARs, different enhanced STARs, so you would have to apply your reduction of the STAR under that. The total, if we were to go with the maximum amount of the 2% tax levy limitation, it would be the 4.266% or 57 cents per $1,000. On a home of $100,000, it would be $57. And to show you on the next sheet what we were talking about with the expenditures, because the revenues stayed the same, it doesn't change, but the expenditures went up a little from last time, which meant we have a shortfall of $1.919 million. If we go for the tax levy at its maximum, it would be $314,920. If we used fund balance or reserves of $800,000, we're still at a shortfall of $804,000. And we can get back to the next page. The thing that changed on this page is the bottom line. If you remember last week, we were talking about having $137,000. It has been reduced by the $26,000 in health insurance. So it's $111,000. Depending on what comes back from the state will determine at what point we start adding in different areas. If we get some money back, we'll probably start from the bottom, like I said, and work ourselves up the list. So the last thing removed is interscholastic sports. We would have some sort of an abbreviated or a shortened number of sports offered. And at this point, it doesn't look with $111,000. And if they're talking $125 million instead of the $200 million, we're probably looking at less than another $100,000 to come back in state aid. Which again, if you haven't contacted your representative, please do so. The more they hear from us, the better it's going to be. So, the next page is the contacts. The next two pages are the contacts that we've set. And since I don't have anything on the revenue, I can't make a final recommendation to the board or to anyone. We are recommending at this point that we have another presentation next Wednesday, the 4th, 7:30 again here in the auditorium. Hopefully at that point, everything will be known that we will know, and we can go forward with whatever the recommendations would be.
Vince, there was some talk today, I think I heard, what's his name, Primer, on the radio, the School Boards Association president. He said something about the high-need school districts will be aided more than other districts. I don't know if that's just blowing smoke or not, but that's the talk. I don't know if we're high-need districts, since we're considered rich now by the state.
We are considered a wealthier district, so that won't necessarily help us. We have passed, and I keep talking about the combined wealth ratio. The town of Greenwich, and I don't mean to pick on them other than the fact that in Washington County, the town of Greenwich is the wealthiest per parcel of land. We have passed them in our combined wealth ratio next year. We're going to be 7.8, they're 7.4. But our income to wealth ratio is still less than theirs. Ours is about 0.6, and theirs is, I think, 6.4. Our free and reduced lunch is usually an indication of a more needy district. We're about 33%, and they're about 18%. And that just gives you some overview of what we're fighting right now with the state. They're saying that our property is going up to the point where we are a wealthy community. And we all know that that's not the truth. And I've been trying to get Betty Little and Tony Jordan to understand that. And all I get is, well, everybody's having the same problem. From what I've been told, I don't know if everybody's heard me say, Rick Timms from the State Schoolwide Finance Consortium, the southern tier, which is west of Binghamton and south of Syracuse, Buffalo area, they're hitting the wall before we are. And let's say we at least have some reserves to still use. They're to the point where they're not able to use reserves. So I have no idea what's going to happen down there. And that's probably to our advantage. If something happens to them and they have to fix it, we will get the benefit of that because we're not as bad as they are at this point. Unfortunately, it still goes back to the same thing I have been saying all along. Next year, our property values start to decline, and I would assume our income would be the same thing when you fill out your state taxes and check that little box what school district you're in. Would still continue to decline. If that's the case, I don't know how we would compare to the rest of the state. Because right now what's happening is upstate New York is increasing in the property value while downstate is going down. That's why we're getting caught in that crunch. And it affects other things. I talk about our expense-driven revenues. It affects all of our aids when it comes to transportation, special ed reimbursements, public and private, and a whole myriad of different expense-driven revenues. The only expense-driven revenue that it hasn't affected to this point is our building aid. So that's still at 79%, 79.5 cents. So that's basically it for me tonight, and I apologize for making you come out on such short notice, but I didn't know a way that we could postpone the meeting without getting people even more upset. So if anybody has any questions, I'll stay as long as you want, and I'll answer them.
No questions.
Going back to the evaluation, what, say you get an administrator or a teacher got hired at,
Under the present system, if somebody, it's very difficult to move an individual who is tenured. In the new system, it's supposedly if you do not get effective or highly effective ratings, it starts to accumulate against the individual. And all they keep saying is it will be easier to replace an ineffective teacher. They haven't gone through what exactly the details are at this point, but supposedly with, it's called a Heidi rating, H for the highly effective, effective, developing, and it needs an improvement. So when it gets along those lines, if you consistently fall within the needs of improvement, there's a teacher improvement plan, and then if that doesn't work, they say it's easier to move, but we haven't been there yet, so I don't know how easy it will be to remove an ineffective teacher.
It's going to take a long time.
The way it is right now, it's next to impossible, but the way the system is headed towards, it should make it easier to get an individual. Quite frankly, I think it will never get to that point. If you have somebody that's that bad, they'll probably leave. Or if it's something that somebody honestly wants professional development or help, it'll be easy to get them help to put them on the path of being a much better teacher. I see this as a positive, quite frankly. It's probably viewed as adversarial, but for the most part, if you sit down and work with somebody, I don't think there's anybody that wants to be bad at anything. So if there's a matter of an opinion and you have an evaluation, you can quantify where the areas are that needs to be improved and work collectively to improving the individual. So hopefully we'll never have to experience what it's like to get rid of somebody.
Lillian had some questions.
Yeah, the reading program that you're cutting, what grade level is that?
That's at the secondary.
I'm really concerned about that because if you don't get the kids reading good in the lower grades, they don't ever catch up. They're going to get higher elementary schools and they're not going to be good readers. And that's 90% of all your subjects are reading.
Vince, did you say second or secondary?
Secondary.
Yeah, that's
7 through 12.
Oh, secondary. Oh, I'm sorry.
7 through 12.
Okay, I thought you said second grade. There are 6 buses that come through town and pick up kids from town when they come. If the kids were allowed to walk within the state limits, or ride their bikes or be bus, be transported by their parents, wouldn't that eliminate at least 1 or 2 buses that are going out? So they could get, each of them could get more kids on?
Without seeing where they live, I can't really give you an answer on that. The only reason I say that is if there's 5 buses, they take up 20% of the district, we'll just say, for sake of argument. If you eliminate 1, then they have to pick up 25%. And we've tried that with the late buses, and it leaves the student on the bus way too long. So I don't know how it fits with where everybody is. We still keep going back, and right now, the lawyers are reviewing. In 1992, we put up for a vote whether or not the students would walk. The recommended is 2 miles for elementary students and 3 miles for secondary. And in 1992 and 94, there was up on a special proposition or a separate proposition, and it got voted through and approved both times. So at this point, unless we put it out to another vote, we still have to transport students within the recommended 2 and 3 miles. So that would be something that, if we want to include that in the proposition for the voters to make that decision, we can do that. Actually, it couldn't be done at this May's vote because, I'm trying to think, it's too late. Okay, Kate's shaking her head, no. That's why we made the motion at the last board meeting to approve the mileage change, and then we would review it. But that would be something that would have to go to the voters to change. We can't just arbitrarily change it.
Right. There are, I went through other expenses and supplies, and this is from last year's budget, not this year, and it's $775,000, and I was wondering if we could take, 20 or even 25% off of each one of those, and it would mean some sacrifice. At least it would put some money back. And even the 25% is $19,400, and I know that's not a huge amount of money, but if we did that in a lot of smaller spots, it would add up after a while.
We've been doing that over the years, and as a matter of fact, what was it, last year we did?
2 years ago, all supplies were cut 10% across the board.
And that hasn't been restored?
Yeah.
All supplies were cut by 10% if anybody did that 2 years ago. We have tried. We have gone through this, and I don't mean to be flip about that. Beth and I have spent hours for months trying to look at what would be the best or the least impact. And what we have done over the years here is cut everything that was non-instructional. That's one of the reasons why last year when we had to go out for a second vote, we had proposed originally to use some of operation and maintenance. And we were told that by the board not to do that because it was one of those things that had been cut for years, that's why we're in dire straits and have to have the repairs done through a building project. So it's not that it's something that hasn't been reviewed.
What is the total fund balance? I know we're using 8.
The fund balance, it's determined at the end of the year how much money is left over this year, but we started this year with
$2.4 million. The mid-year projection that was done relatively early was 1.9, so we're heading into the budget season with 1.9, and I'm hopeful that it'll stay around there, but there was some concerns with a special ed student moving into the district. But looking at it again, it's safe to say, you said 1.7.
We projected originally, it was 2.4 to start the year with the budget. We used $1.1 million in the budget to make this year's work. At the mid-year projection, it was 1.9. Since then, we had an additional expenditure that was not even on our radar. What's that?
About $200,000,
so it brought it down to 1.7. And that's the reason why when we sat down and started doing the budget, I'm only asking for 800,000 in the reserves, because if we end the year with 1.7, we can use 800,000 again next year if everything works well. If we can put some money back. As soon as we realized how bad it was going to be this fall, we stopped all purchase orders, and nothing was ordered unless it was an absolute emergency. We tried to, in all the past years, pre-purchase and do what we could to generate revenue for the next year. We're still trying to do that. So our fund balance, we won't be able to determine that until probably July. But it looks at this point that we're guesstimating about 1.7 we'll end the year with. So we won't be using the entire 1.1 million that we had set last year, but that's because we froze all the purchase orders and didn't order everything that we had tried. Back to your supplies, we haven't ordered all of the supplies and all the items that we needed. It could be a classroom supply, it could be, well, actually, we're saving money this year. Everybody has on their fuel bills, and our overtime for the people to come in and plow and shovel and do all that, because we had a really nice winter. Beth predicted this, and it's going to be the same next year. We can only hope. It's nice summer now.
Trying to save money again. I know the teachers have to chaperone dances or whatever. What about if they didn't do that and the parents would do it? That would save quite a bit of money, I think.
It may save money up front, but it would open the school district up to a huge liability. You can't just eliminate all staff members from an activity like that. That's part of what we're in the process of trying to work out. As of right now, with all the extracurriculars in that budget line that we're removing, there would be no dances or chaperoning or any of that stuff. So at this point, it wouldn't matter if the parents would volunteer. But we couldn't, with our insurance, have only parents. It's not; they're not staff, so it opens the district up to a liability.
You don't have insurance that covers anybody that's in the building, other than the staff.
Okay, but who would be in charge? Who would be responsible? You can't have a parent responsible at an event like that.
I don't believe that.
If they're approved by the board as an advisor, that's a different story. As a coach, that's a different story. But that would mean that you couldn't have a dance unless a particular individual was appointed by the Board of Education to be in charge of that particular activity.
Okay. But you did put together five scenarios when we came. And next week, I was wondering if you could put together some that are going to include, you know, something besides just teachers and extracurricular and sports. There must be some place we could save money someplace.
I guess this is what I keep trying to say. We've been going through the budget for months. I really, you know, if you want to get into the details, I tried to choose the staff member that would have the least impact on the children. So if you want to start going into specific positions, I don't think that's appropriate because everybody will know who that is, but I don't have a problem having that conversation individually with him. I have a hard time. And that was similar to one of the questions last time. I'm not going to put up what each position is worth because people will start evaluating the position based on how much it's being paid. What I tried to do is look at the entire, whether or not we could deliver the same product or as close to the same product as possible. Looking at the number of students that teachers have as a total load and stuff like that, and try to have a minimal impact on the delivery of the education.
I just want to also add that Lillian just said it shouldn't only be teachers and sports and activities, and it's not. There's also there's a cleaner, There's two aides, school psychologist, there's late bus runs. It's a very diverse offering. It is heavily dependent on teacher cuts. But teaching is what we do. That's our largest part of our budget. It's our largest expense. When we have to come up with these kind of cuts, immense cuts, that's going to be the place where we're going to get most of them from, for now. We'll see what happens next year.
We're a service business, and I keep saying that. Between two-thirds and three-quarters of our budget are always going to be staff members. And unfortunately, we're predominantly teachers. And that usually is what, if we can do other things, believe me, we have. And that's probably what's put us in this position. Over the years, whenever we've had a decision to make a cut or cut back on something, it's been other than an individual. And that's why it's very close to the bone in all the other spots. With the cut a few years ago, I didn't know whether or not that would be able to be done. We did do it, and with freezing the purchase orders, I don't think there's anything that we didn't get that we absolutely positively needed. But for the most part, if it was something that we could do without, we made the decision at that time during the year not to do it. And I'm sure there's some staff members here that can attest to some of those denials and purchase orders. But we're trying. It's a multi-million dollar business, and we have to look at every aspect of it. It's not just the fact we have to deliver the product. We're here to educate the students. But we also have to make sure that the facility is maintained, that the students are delivered from home to here and then returned in the best possible way that we can. That's why we try to have some sort of a rotation or replacement schedule for the buses. The community has voted down the buses two of the last 4 years, which has put the schedule into a huge crimp. I keep saying we have a 15-year-old bus. Technically, it's only 14 years old, and we have two 13-year-olds. Depending on when you got it, the model of the year is what's screwing up on that one. But we have had vehicles for 14 years that right now are used as spares, and since they're not used on a regular basis, they're the ones that usually break down more often. Since they're not used on a regular basis, the per mile cost for that bus goes up tremendously. So that's usually why you try to replace your fleet. DOT inspections are much more stringent than what you and I go through for our vehicles. If there's any rust or anything on the body, it will fail. And it makes it much more difficult because a diesel engine will go on forever and ever and ever if you take care of it. But DOT's already told us there's a couple of buses that we have that as a matter of fact, it's not the 14-year-old bus, it's one of the 13-year-old bus that will not pass the next time. And I don't know if he's just being nice to us to pass it this time or what the story is, but he's told us that's the last time. So those are the decisions that we have to make. We have to balance everything when we go along. I know a $17 million budget sounds like a lot, but when you start adding up the pieces, it's not. I mean, there's a heck of an impact. It could go either way. $35,000 can throw us over, and then in the same respects, if we cut $35,000, it can never cut. Believe me, I don't sleep a lot, William. These cuts are not done without a huge amount of thought and input by everybody.
No more questions? Any more questions out in the public? Yes.
This year we have four at the first and kindergarten. Every other level we have three. This year I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. Were they about 16 in kindergarten? 18 in kindergarten. So it'll raise it up to whatever, 16, probably around 21, 22.
But
What we have done is gone through and picked out the number of students that would be at each level. And it is a possibility depending on who signs up for the advanced placement courses. It doesn't mean that the courses will be the same size that they are this year. If you want to start getting into details, we have less than 400 students in each of the, well, three of the four major cores, and we have five teachers at those levels. So if you divide five into 400, it's averaging between 75 and 85 students in the secondary level. So we should be able to offer the same variety, but whether or not a course goes, and I keep going back to the same thing, we had three students that signed up for an AP course this year, one moved out of the district, one did not qualify. And my first year on the here, the board asked me for the list of courses. We had 70 classes, 7 through 12, that had less than 10 students in it. We had a couple of classes with only one student. So I can't in good conscience stand here in front of everybody and say we're going to have AP courses with one or two students in them. We averaged of those 70 classes, 4.5 students in those classes. So that's why some of the cuts that we made last time would have been made regardless of the budget crunch. But we're reaching a point, quite frankly, that it's getting back to what the average load should be. And I know I'm going to have arguments from the teaching staff on that.
Can I answer also? One of the, I don't know if you were here last time, we talked about a study that actually had two more districts now joined us, apparently, in the CASDA study.
I haven't heard yet, but I've heard the rumors, but I haven't heard.
In the paper, anyway, Hudson Falls and Whitehall, I think.
I heard Hudson Falls was going to join us.
One of the things we're trying to do, and it won't help us at all next year, and it might not help us the year after, is to figure out how we can combine some of these low enrollment classes so we can teach them regionally. Move kids around, move teachers around, do something. So that instead of having an AP class with two or three kids, we have an AP class with 15 or 20. I graduated in a high school class of 300-something kids. There was no problem with filling up AP classes. We never had any less than 20 in a class. But this is much smaller. If we can combine some of these schools, we can do it. Again, it's not going to do anything for next year, and it may not even be the year after that, but we're trying to look down the future because we see these problems. These classes are not getting bigger. The grades are getting smaller.
Does the school have a policy regarding the number of students that must be enrolled in a class or the class to progress to actually be held?
There is no policy per se, but we usually try to say about 7 or 8. We have a couple this year that have less than that we still offer. Depending on the enrollment, that's why I think the first meeting that we had, the conversation came up about only 5 students that would be possible, 10% of the senior class next year would be in AP Calc. I can't say that won't run, because when you take a step back and look at what's going on, quite frankly, that's a pretty good percentage of the students taking AP. So I would probably ask the board to run a course with only 5 students in it. It depends on what's going on. I obviously can't run a class, especially, I can't in good conscience stand in front of the community and say, okay, we're going to run all these classes with 2 or 3 students. So.
And also, I heard you say that the reading position is actually being cut from the secondary level.
Secondary.
What would be offered to those kids that struggle and need that remedial support?
We've talked about that, and what we're probably going to have to do is use the individual that's down at the elementary to cover some of the, especially the individuals that are going from 6th to 7th grade next year, because they're used to having that. But we will do whatever we can, AIS or whatever, I don't know. I can't answer that off the top of my head because I don't know how their schedules will fall. I wish I could say that we're gonna keep a teacher to do reading in the secondary, but again, that's the a position that has fewer students impacted when that position is eliminated.
But if that elementary position, the reading position, is now more or less split between the elementary and high school, somebody will be shortchanged.
It should still be predominantly at the elementary, but in the same respects, the reading, the literacy program that we're doing is really paying dividends. We started seeing results last year in the ELA, 3 through 8 ELA, throughout the BOCES. So I'm hoping that continues. And it will still need reading specialists, but not to the extreme that we have in the past.
So how many reading specialists do you have on staff now?
Reading specialists.
Yeah, sure.
You have one, two.
So we have three at this point. You have three, I'm sorry, I didn't see three. So we have four at this point.
K-12.
K-12. Three at the elementary, one at the secondary, yes.
I'll have a question.
Sure.
Any more questions out there? Okay, I apologize.
Yeah, I just have a quick question.
You just beat me before I close the meeting.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to cut anybody else off. I might have a more important question. But you did say that specific cost breakdowns would be available on your website. I'm wondering if you can say where on the website that would be, because it does say, if you look at the very high-level summary you provided, the administration, buildings and grounds, central services and supervision are only being cut by $65,000, and it would be nice to see what the breakdown actually is. And
I remember saying that the list of accounts, or the chart of accounts would be on the website. I don't remember saying
that. I'm reading that from your questions, the sheet that you handed out. Can specific cost breakdowns be made available? We'll put it on the website. And I just asked it because I was on the website today and I didn't see it, and I was wondering if...
Well, we put the chart of accounts and there's no individual line breakdown.
I recall from last meeting. Sorry.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
The sports and the activity breakdown was on the website. That, I thought, was the breakdown that was being requested.
Oh, okay. No, actually, I was more interested in the other stuff. But is that possible to put some more of the admin costs and that kind of thing and general?
I didn't hear you.
I'm sorry. Is it possible to put some of the general services, the sports services breakdowns on the website as well? And the first four items that are on your list here.
That would be up to the board. I don't have a problem.
Was it too difficult? Is it for our group?
What it's going to do is open it up to exactly what happened at, South Plains Falls. That's the only concern I will have with it. Everybody will become an expert as to where, we don't need that. We cut it line by line.
Yeah, that's what we want to do.
How much detail
I will never tolerate that. Okay.
How much detail are you expecting?
I'm going to stand through a meeting if we're going to sit here and take apart every line item. That's unconscionable. You don't know how to run a district.
Let me just relate an anecdote from when I was on the board back in the 90s. We had a board member who thought that he knew more than the superintendent. And we spent 3 hours one meeting going through the budget line by line by line. And we did save money. After 3 hours, we saved $14,000. Hardly a good investment in time or effort. So I'm not sure what you're looking for, but I think I would trust the superintendent, business manager, and the various principals and teachers in the school to come up with a better idea of where money should be spent. If it seems unreasonable to somebody in a general sense, then I think we should deal with it. But I'm not willing to go line by line through the budget either.
But could you put that information on the website, or is that not possible?
Not a problem.
Thank you.
I saw another hand go up. Yes?
I was just going to make a comment, and I think it's great, and I understand, as I am an administrator as well, why you would be feeling that way. I think it would be great, because part of what I'm hearing in the community, for lack of better words, is mistrust. And I think that sometimes, even though it takes a lot of work for administrators to do it, to put some of this stuff out there so that people see it, it might eliminate some of the rumor bill. I think since you were talking about class size, that's a rumor as well. I've seen in public presentations from BOE meetings where they've even done that. Here's what we've had in class sizes. Here's where we're going to. And really have done a comparison. I think it eliminates some of that rumor bill by putting it out there. Just here it is.
I think it's going to create many more experts. And it's going to create more problems.
Okay, now we're developing more questions. Yes?
The student council has prepared something for me to read. Could you speak up a little bit?
want to read it here?
My name is Sarah Cunningham, and I am speaking on behalf of the student body here at CCS. We are very concerned about our future and are afraid that the cuts being made within our school district will have a large effect on our daily lives and future. As students, we feel as if programs such as sports, arts, and music shape the makeup of our school, as well as our community. Without extracurriculars such as these, the overall motivation within the student body would decrease. Extracurricular programs provide the students at Cambridge with a way to get involved and express themselves. For many of the students, the extracurricular programs are one of the main reasons they want to come to school and keep their grades high. It has also been proven that students participating in these programs have a higher success rate in school. Not only do extracurricular programs provide the students with something to do, but also allow the students to interact with each other, allowing them to learn the values of teamwork, leadership, and responsibility. All three of these concepts are necessary in everyday life and allow individuals to become better people all around. We are also concerned about ninth period being tough. Many students rely on ninth period to receive extra help from their teacher on a lesson they do not understand. The one-on-one assistance that is provided to the students here at Cambridge is an extraordinary thing that has caused our success rates to be so high. The attention the teachers are willing to give the students in order for the student to succeed is great. But without a ninth period, their extra time to see the teacher, this is not possible. One of the reasons people live in Cambridge is because of our school itself. Many of the people have returned to Cambridge and have started families here. However, if people are not able to see a successful future for their children and themselves in Cambridge, they will not return. Cambridge Central has been very successful in years past. And in order for this to continue, the students need to be given opportunities such as sports, extracurriculars, and ninth period. Thank you.
Thank you. Great job.
Sarah,
excuse me for a second. I don't know of any discussions to eliminate ninth period. Do you?
No.
Okay. I don't know where that rumor started.
If there's no late caution, then there's...
No. We're working on that. Give us some credit, guys. We're working on it.
I understand. That's why she's referring to that. It's okay. That line with the late
It's two different items. And I think Mr. Canini has said several times, if we get money back from the state and can balance this budget, we will move from the bottom up and regenerate some sports, hopefully some extracurriculars. We don't know yet. I wish we had the numbers tonight so we could tell you yes or no what's going to happen next week. We don't know. First over here, and then you again, please.
The National Honor Society is also...
Okay.
Good evening. We are here representing the National Honor Society. We would like to discuss the impact that National Honor Society, one of the many extracurricular programs here at CCS, has made in our community and various other communities as well. As a group, we have cut and collected coupons for our troops. Over $600,000 worth was cut just last year. We've sent food baskets to the community, volunteered at the breast cancer walk in Salem, volunteered for St. Peter's Journey Through the Body, helped the elementary with letters to Santa, collected Valentines for veterans, hugs for heroes, mentored numerous students, held car washes to support our troops, and sent clothing and school supplies to Fonda after the devastating effects of Hurricane Irene. Participating in all of these activities is an extraordinary experience which enables us members to broaden our horizons outside the academic classroom. It also makes us here at Cambridge more competitive with the students that attend much larger schools. If we were to cut National Honor Society, the members would not be able to have these experiences. It would also deprive potential future members of being a part of this group. If National Honor Society was no longer at Cambridge, students would not be able to put it on their college resume. Having National Honor Society on a student's college resume can play a major role in their acceptance, along with Honor Society being a part of various school clubs and after-school events can also make a student's college resume more competitive. As members of the National Honor Society, we feel that clubs and activities are a vital part of our school. We ask that you please consider this as you continue to draft the budget for the next school year. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, excellent. What I think all of this needs to still, as many times as possible, send it down to our legislators. Hit the send, put that in an email, both of the comments, and hit them as many times as you can. They need to hear the same thing.
Do this, wrap this up to some degree next Wednesday at 7:30. Vince, is there any way to postpone it a day or two if we don't have numbers, or are you hoping we have things by then?
The prediction from Albany is that there should be out tomorrow afternoon, so we should have a pretty good number or info as to what's going on from the state aspect.
Okay, tomorrow. Good. Thank you very much, folks, for the continued high attendance. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Once more, thanks again to the administrators. We really appreciate that, too.
You too.
Yeah, we still pop.